The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack at the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and I am prepared to break the cover open on a brand new issue of our state magazine celebrating North Carolina. Today's reading and every reading of our state is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. If you want to talk to them, give them a call, 919-781-1973. And now it's the time to break the cover on the October 2018 edition of our state. The theme this month is Into the Wild, Where to Find Your Mountain Magic. There's a picture on the cover of a hiker standing on an outcrop right on the very edge. It's not a terribly long drop, but I don't think he'd be walking away if he did fall over the edge there. I might need a little help. Not sure where that is, but I can tell you that in this issue, the articles cover places in the east from Bryce's Creek to the west in Bryson City. We're going to begin our reading of our state this week and this month, as I always do, with the Welcome to Our State by Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief. 1 year, there were 33 quiches. They came in by Tupperware, each entry's recipe, sometimes typed but mostly handwritten on lined notebook paper, folded over and taped to the lid. They came in fluted, disposable quiche pans, tin foiled on the top to hold in the heat. They came in heirloom porcelain, in dishes handed down. They came in glazed earthenware, and they filled the long table that was set up in the education building at the North Carolina State Fair. First a dozen, then two dozen. The quiches just kept coming, and we as food judges wondered how in the world we were going to eat all those quiches. For the past 8 years, I've been a judge in the North Carolina State Fair Special Cooking Contests, a competition that highlights North Carolina commodities like eggs, pecans, pork, and sweet potatoes, and gives our state's home cooks a chance to claim a cash prize and, more important, a coveted blue ribbon. There aren't rules. Judges aren't allowed to see the name or hometown of the entrant, but we are required to read the recipe thoroughly to ensure the cook fulfilled the ingredient requirements. The quiche contest, for example, required a minimum of 4 eggs, but the more, the better. We judge for taste, creativity, ease of preparation, presentation. We take it seriously. Among us, there's an unspoken gold standard of measurement. What makes to our individual tastes, anyway, a winning pecan pie, a famous apple cake, a plate of perfectly smoked barbecue? 1 year there were pound cakes, cakes with crusts the color of goldenrod, cakes with tender ivory crumbs. And in those entries I could see the pound cake that I once knew, that vanilla-hued creation of sweetness and light that perfectly complemented the antique lace of my grandmother's old folded tablecloth, the one she always brought out for the holidays. I remembered how that cake got toasted for breakfast and spooned over with strawberry sauce that had been jarred back in the spring, a cake that was made with flour, eggs, and sugar, sure, but also with warmth and kindness and tenderness, simplicity, humility, and love. And each year, with a new procession of dishes, of hopeful contenders, the shrimp and grits, the sugar cookies, the sweet potato casseroles, the chicken pies, I feel immediately at home, taken back to all the tables I once knew, appreciative of so many hands that cooked meals, mixed doughs, stirred stews, and I hope that you've had cooks like this in your life, too. Because if you have, then you know what I know, that we're the ones who won the prize. And now, as I also always do on the first reading of each month, I am going to interpret the pictorial in the center of our state magazine. They call it a photo essay. For those of you who cannot see it or cannot see it well enough to fully enjoy the colors and the views, etc. This one's on Banner Elk. High in a northwestern corner of the state, a little town on the Elk River welcomes new friends and temporary neighbors to celebrate mild summers, snowy winters, and perhaps most spectacularly, bright, beautiful autumns. Written by Katie St. Singh, photographed by Tim Robison. Caption on our double spread covering the back of the title. At Banner Elk Stables, Susie Parkinson and her daughter Becky guide riders over streams and up hillsides with sweeping views of the surrounding mountains, including grandfather in the distance. That, of course, does not mean their grandfather. It means Grandfather Mountain. One of them is on a white horse, the other on a brown horse. They both have jeans on and long sleeves, one in a plaid pattern. She's got long hair flowing down the back of her head, and the other woman with pink. They're going up a trail, not very steep at all, that has obviously been trod over by many horses. You can see how it's torn up a bit. The view drops off just beyond the trail, and we see a little bit of field, a telephone line actually down there, power line or whatever, and some trees that are beginning to change in color. Then they get some darker green trees. Then off in the medium distance, just solid green of a lot of trees, and then in the far distance, it begins to get a little bit hazy, and we see Grandfather Mountain up against a big, white, puffy cloud. Now, Overleaf, How to Coach a Woolly Winner. Find a promising contender. We're talking about the Woolly Worm Festival here. Find a promising contender in the wild, or buy one at the festival, and name it something fun like Patsy Climb or Woolly Nelson. Keep it warm, like Alden Goldstein is shown here, and give it a pep talk. When it's time to race, cheer wildly. Coaches like Abby Mashburn on the opposite page swear by blowing on or clapping at their worms to hurry them up the string. The one thing you can't do? Help it along with your hand. Now, if you haven't seen a woolly worm, and that would include me, this young man is holding it out to the cameraman in his hand. Now, you remember, it's a young boy's hand, and it takes up the width of two fingers, and it's rolled up into a ball, and it's kind of, it's brown and dark brown, and it's all furry. It's like a woolly ball of fur, kind of like what you find in a rug, one of those hard rugs that is used at a back door, let's say, to get everything off your feet. It's kind of that stiff type of appearance. I'm sure they're very soft. Then the script on the next page says, tiny fortune tellers creep silently across roads and through the woods around Avery County, wearing in their fuzzy coats. Maybe secrets of the upcoming season. Mountain lore holds that the 13 brown and black segments of a tiger moth caterpillar correspond to the 13 weeks of winter. A light band promises mild weather. A darker band forecasts a cold and snowy week. But the predictions can vary from worm to worm. So In the late 1970s, Grandfather Mountain heir Jim Morton devised a plan. There would be a race, and the winning worm would provide the High County's official forecast. Since the inaugural Woolly Worm Festival in 1978, the event, always held in downtown Banner Elk during the third weekend of October, has grown steadily. Last year, about 20,000 people turned out to enjoy crafts, food, and live entertainment. Visit with Merriweather, the Woolly Worm mascot, shown here on the right. Now, that's really a very tall human in a woolly worm outfit. Cheer on 1,000 caterpillars racing up 3-foot strings in 25 worm heats, and witness the reading of the winning worm, who correctly predicted the cold and mild weeks of winter. And here's a young lady blowing on her woolly worm as it is climbing up the 3-foot string. There's one in the distance, oh, way up near the top, so I'm afraid this is not the winner we're looking at here. But, you know, you can get tired when you get to the top and maybe not make it. And the next couple over to her, not so good. Overleaf, downtown Banner Elk. The natural beauty and bounty of the high country have beckoned visitors for centuries, ever since Native Americans arrived to hunt in the Elk River Valley. Today, Banner Elk's year-round residents number just more than 1,100. But when the population swells with summer residents, fall leaf peepers, and winter skiers, downtown is ready with cuisine from around the world, sometimes in the same building. Sorrento's Italian Bistro has been serving classic family recipes like Tortellini's Sorrento's and Mrs. A's Crab Cake since 1983. Third-generation chef Nicole Palazzo grew up making meatballs with her grandmother, Mrs. A. But as she got older, her culinary interests expanded. So in 2015, the family opened the Sushi Club, now known as Chef Table, upstairs as a showcase for Palazzo's sushi and other creations. And here we have some folks, a man and woman and a young lady who's got long hair, but instead of hair extensions, I think she has colored streamers hanging down the back of her head and body all the way down to her upper hips attached to her long hair. And this family is coming up on Sorrento's, which of course has some outdoor seating and a tree that is green leaves left on it. They colored ones are blowing thin right about now. The elk statue that welcomes visitors to downtown was donated in 2002 by Elaine Wold and her late husband Keith as the first phase of Corner on Main Park. So here we have a statue. It looks like it might be made of cement, actually. I'm not really sure. Of an elk, it's front legs are higher than its rear legs, and so its body is sloped up at 45 degrees. It's holding its head high and has a big set of antlers sticking out above its ears. And again, in the background, kind of out of focus, is a panorama of fall trees and their leaf color. In the foreground, they've got some pretty marigolds of various colors and a few small pumpkins. Stonewall's Restaurant. In the mid-80s, Scott Garland was a student in the culinary arts program at Avery County High School, dreaming of where he'd go after graduation. Yet, 30 years later, after earning a degree from the Culinary Institute of America, traveling the country and working in various positions in the food industry, he longed to return home. With his partner, Chef Tim Heschke, he purchased Stonewall's, a longtime staple of the Banner Elk dining scene. Garland himself dined there before his senior prom in 1986. The two transformed the old steakhouse into a modern, airy restaurant decorated with local art. While they took care to preserve best-selling favorites like prime rib and Stonewall's extensive salad bar, They began making as much as possible in-house, from the bread and salad dressing to the ice cream and sorbet, and added a range of menu items to ensure that everyone feels welcome. And there's a picture of the two gentlemen here, standing proud in front of their counter. And on the right-hand side, some of their food creations. When the weather is warm, Heshke's menus include special fish dishes like grilled mahi-mahi with mango and pomegranate salsa. As fall fades into winter, he'll warm up the skiing crowd with fried chicken, meatloaf, and mashed potatoes on Comfort Food Mondays. Pretty picture here of the mahi-mahi. It's got a little bit of greenery on its side, and then the salsa is piled between it and another piece, and it's on a pretty white plate. The Banner Elk Winery. When Banner Elk Winery opened on the grounds of a historic blueberry farm in 2006, it was the first commercial winery in Avery County, and many people were skeptical about co-founder Richard Wolf's plan to grow grapes at an altitude of nearly 5,000 feet. But Wolf chose his grapes carefully, and in the years since, his award-winning wines have earned national recognition. Today, Banner Elk Winery is a celebration of the high country, from the views of rolling hills outside to the cozy tasting room where employees spread the word about mountain wines and generously share the recipe for their famous sangria. In addition to its renowned reds and whites, Banner Elk is also known for a pair of specialty wines, blueberry, made from the fruit of the mature bushes on the property, and ice wine, made from high-elevation grapes that remain on the vine until the first freeze. So here we see some green grapes. They look exactly like the grapes that you might buy in the store today. Unlikely that that's what they are, but that's what they look like, hanging on a very old vine. And here's a woman with a very large glass filled with a light-colored wine, perhaps Chardonnay or something like that, and then some of the awards that Banner Elk has won attached to the various bottles. If you can't get enough of Banner Elk Winery's peaceful beauty in a single afternoon, you can reserve a suite in its luxurious villa. Many couples are so enchanted by the winery that they choose to get married there against the backdrop of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And there's some of the low-lying Blue Ridge Mountains in the background, and then we have some of the grapes, some of which are covered with netting to protect it from the birds who like to come and peck at those grapes. And then we have some bushes and a very nice set of very, very big stacked stones. I don't mean the little things that you could pick up with one or two hands. I'm talking about five men type stacked stones. And there's a picture of there's a statue of a horse on its hind legs as if it's about to leap over a fence or something. And a picnic table, and then a round metal table where two people are enjoying a glass of wine on a pretty day with blue skies and lots of puffy clouds. And now, Artisanal Restaurant. Even before Artisanal opened, longtime locals knew of Chef Bill Green's work ethic and passion for food. He'd grown up in Avery County and began working at Grandfather Golf and Country Club as a teenager. After earning degrees from the Culinary Institute of America, he gathered experience in the kitchens of prestigious restaurants around the country. In 2005, he and his wife Anita opened Artisanal in a strip shopping center in Banner Elk. The elegant, eclectic menu, built on Bill's classic French training and influenced by his frequent travels, impressed the owners of Diamond Creek Golf Club, who offered to build a restaurant that matched the spirit of his creations. The result, a spacious barn with reclaimed wood walls, or reclaimed wood walls, floors and vaulted ceilings glow gold in the restaurant's ambient lighting, opened in 2009 to serve both Diamond Creek and members of the public. Each carefully crafted dish proves what Bill's high school teachers, some of whom have dined at Artisanal, knew way back when, that his talent would make the community proud. What a delicious dish he has here. It looks like a chicken with a little bit of charred skin on it. There's some little honeysuckle blossoms laid in there. A little bit of greenery. It looks like boysenberries, and a boysenberry sauce has been layered over everything in this lovely white bowl. Here's a picture of the high-ceilinged room with its exposed wood planks that are very dark. It says, in the dining room or on the creekside terrace, a meal at Artisanal is an experience to be treasured. The restaurant is only open from May through October. During that time, Chef Green sources as many ingredients as possible from local farms for dishes like crispy seared chicken breast with chanterelles, chard, and a blackberry gastrique. That must be what I was looking at on the other page. Historic Banner Elk School. The old stone school was filled with memories. Constructed in 1939 as a WPA project, it was where generations of Banner Elk children had attended their first classes. When Avery County built a new elementary school in 2011, the town council couldn't bear to see the old one torn down. So, in 2014, they bought the property and began renovating the building into a cultural arts center. The old library is still filled with books as the Banner Elk Book Exchange. The gymnasium has been converted into an intimate 99-seat theater, the home of Ensemble Stage. Work by local artists fills the two rooms of BE Artists Gallery. With help from donors, the town has been able to replace roofing, windows, and more, and as much as possible, they preserved original elements of the school, a pair of ornate radiators, gleaming Appalachian red oak floors, and outside walls built of grandfather green rock. Nearly impossible to find now, an unmistakable link to the past. Here's the school. It says the green space in front of the school hosts the Woolly Worm Festival, which we read about earlier in October, as well as an art show three times a year. During Art on the Green, the lawn becomes an open-air gallery, and proceeds from booth rental fees go to the school. The school looks in terrific condition, has a beautiful metal roof. There's a little trim of natural wood, almost looks like redwood, not quite sure. There's a lovely stonework around the entrance, which says Historic Banner Elk School. The landscaping is beautiful. There's a ramp up to the front door, and it has a very nice wooden railing. On the next page, with dedication and creativity, neighbors have worked together to transform downtown Banner Elk into a lively center of art and culture. Up at the top, it's a picture of a man sitting at a table, and he's speaking to another man who doesn't look too happy, standing up looking at him. And it says, classroom lessons have been replaced with theater productions like Slow Dance on the Killing Ground, featuring Stephen Ware and Alex Mitchell, and local art, including ceramics by Newland potter David Schroeder. And you can see some of his pottery down at the bottom, and a couple looking at a lot of framed photos on a wall behind some of the pottery. Apple Hill Farm. The everyday magic at Lee Rankin's farm, a visitor holding freshly laid eggs for the first time, Rankin tucking in her horses for the night with a kiss and a carrot, feels easygoing and lived in, as though this place were always here on Valley Mountain. But Rankin remembers the exact moment nearly 20 years ago, when she came face to face with an alpaca for the first time. She was a cookbook author with little experience caring for animals, but in an instant, she knew she wanted to be around these soulful creatures. She said goodbye to her astonished family and friends and moved with her 2-year-old son, Will, to Banner Elk to start a farm. Her plan was simply to raise alpacas, to build a life for herself and Will. The people soon wanted to be part of the community, but people soon wanted to be part of the community she was creating. Now, in addition to tending to the animals, including llamas, goats, horses, donkeys, chickens, dogs, cats, and pigs, Rankin and her staff offer tours, helping visitors remember how how to listen to nature. She's here holding a black and white hen against her chest. And on the right-hand side, there's three alpacas staring at the cameraman. And I do mean staring. The 20 alpacas of Apple Hill contribute their fiber, prized for its softness and warmth, to make yarn that's sold at the farm store. Each yarn bears the name of an alpaca, so you can meet front to back Aspen, Gumby, and Tequila, and let them help you knit a cozy sweater. Well, that seems a little bit far-fetched, but whatever. Lees McRae College. At the turn of the 20th century, when a young Presbyterian minister named Edgar Tufts arrived in the mountains of North Carolina, Banner Elk was a remote village with limited educational opportunities for young residents. Tufts had come to serve as a pastor, but he soon began planting the seeds for what would become Lees McRae College, inviting a small group of students to meet around the fire in his living room. The fireside classroom became a boarding school for young women, which in turn became a co-educational junior college. And finally, in 1990, a four-year college. Before his death in 1923, Tufts planned the construction of six stone buildings, the first built in 1920, which still stand on the campus today, a reminder of the Reverend's vision. And here's a couple of stone buildings behind a very old tree. And they are just gorgeous stonework. Absolutely magnificent. And on the right-hand side, it says, Lees McRae students who major in wildlife biology with a concentration on wildlife rehabilitation have an opportunity to gain hands-on experience on campus. At the May Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, faculty members like Amber McNamara, care for more than 1,500 sick or injured mammals, birds, and reptiles each year, with the goal of releasing every orphaned squirrel and hurt turtle back into the wild. And she's looks like she's holding some animal up against a breathing tube here. And there's a sign below in front of the Dan and Diane May Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. And finally, the historic Mill Pond. Reverend Tufts had a motto for the school he started in the heart of the Blue Ridge. In the mountains, of the mountains, for the mountains. From the beginning, Lees McRae emphasized self-sufficiency and made the most of the land around it. Some families couldn't afford tuition, so the school accepted other forms of payment, including sheep, pigs, and even second-hand cars. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I certainly hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleredingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138, and so long for now.